This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs, Connecticut. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you're listening to Bicycle Talk. It is, I had the wrong thing on my notes here.
It's January 10th.
Oh, I can't believe I did that. Okay, 2018. Yes, we're on a new year here. Yes, we are. New year, starting another episode here. This will be number 81, which is really exciting. It's kind of cool. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, the lovely Fran Stort.
Howdy.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. And if you would like to contribute to the show or be a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Starting off the new year with Ron's Rant of the Week. Well, I had to do it because it's the new year and it just got implemented out in Oregon, and Oregon tax starts January 1st, 2018. Gonna rant on this. I know that there's people out there that are bicycle advocates here saying this is going to be such a great thing because it's going to put money into infrastructure for cycling, and that's really what it's all intended to do, and this is how it's going to make things great, and on and on and on and on. But why are we taxing bicycles for this? Why are we not taxing transportation for this? Okay, let's take a good look at this. How about taxing vehicles on gross weight instead of an additional tax on bicycles? Let's think about that for a second. I ride my bicycle. I'm a very, you know, hefty 142-pound cyclist that rides on a really super heavy 20-pound bicycle. Maybe it's a 15-pound bicycle, depending on which day I'm riding my bike. And so I have all this impact and damage that I'm putting on the roads, right? And then there's the truck-like vehicle, the TLV, that passes me. And in it has, with intentions, that it's going to carry, you know, mom and dad and all the kids and all that. But really, it's probably got one person on it, just like I have one person on my bicycle.
Sometimes it does have mom, dad, and all the kids.
And sometimes it does, and that's great. And sometimes it's a contractor who has all his tools or her tools with them, and they need to carry these things. I'm not opposed to that vehicle for that use. What I am opposed to is that you just use that to transport yourself around town because you feel safer in it. That just goes against everything that I believe in. So TLVs I'm not real big on. But, hey, if you're going to buy one of those, if that's your decision that you want to go out and you want to get yourself a nice big fat TLV that you can drive down the road and that, you know, you feel better about that and all, let's take a look at putting tax on the weight of the vehicle. Okay, they do this with trucking industry. If you have a gross weight of so many tons and you're driving a big tractor trailer truck, you get taxed on it. You get taxed on your weight. You also get fined if you're overweight, and they will weigh you. You see weighing stations on the side of the road. So why not have an additional tax on cars and trucks that are at a gross weight of, let's say, over 5,000 or 6,000 pounds? Because there's a whole bunch of them out there. And, of course, this will make the auto industry go scrambling to try to make them lighter, and they'll try to make them out of carbon fiber and aluminum or whatever they can do to make them lighter. But on the positive side of that, they will also become more energy efficient, so that'll be a good thing. But stop picking on the cyclists. We are the answer to the problem of congestion and traffic, not the problem. This is my rant. I'm just gonna get it out there. The Oregon tax is going to supposedly generate $1.2 million of special transportation funds. And the there's now been some discussion and question as to whether it really will go to them. If anyone knows about that out there, you can contact me on my Facebook page or send an email to me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. I would love to hear exactly how this is going to be allocated and how you're going to work this out so that the bicycles really get the money. And I have an idea here, too. I just have a simple idea. Here's a sidebar, okay? If there are yearly, and this stat unfortunately comes from 2015 because nobody keeps up on their stats. So I don't have any current stats for 2017 right now. This is from 2015. But in Oregon in 2015, there were approximately 1,432,000 cars and trucks that were registered in the state of Oregon. Now, if you take that number right there, that simple number right there, and you take it and you multiply that by $15 per sale or per registration, we'll go with per registration right there because I couldn't get the sale numbers. I tried to find them and I couldn't get them. But if you put that number and you add $15 onto the registration of each of these cars and trucks all year long, you're going to come out with $21 million. Okay. We'll take that 1.2 million or 1.5 million that we were supposed to have generated for our infrastructure for bicycles. We'll take that. And then you're still going to end up with $20 million. So, you know, and I understand now the people in Oregon are all up in arms right now because it is a non-tax state. They don't like tax anything out there. It's the least expensive place to own an automobile in the United States is the state of Oregon. Okay. And now they're adding taxes onto it. And they're, in doing so, they are going to bring in a tremendous amount of revenue. There's a lot of information out there about it. And so they are already taxing automobiles. It is part of that transportation bill. But, you know, it just seems like if you could raise the money in a different way and maybe figure out a way to divide it out better instead of making the roads bigger, faster, wider, more dangerous. Let's face it, the statistics are out there, deadly by design. The statistics are if you make a road wider, straighter, faster, it becomes more deadly. That's just it. That's a fact. That's an actual fact. Why not change the infrastructure around? Why not make it so that we can now share the roads better and safer? Give us our space on the road. Let us be out there as vehicles of transportation as we are walking and or cycling down the road, and accept the fact that there are other alternatives that exist out there besides the idea of the individual car or truck that weighs behemoth-sized 6,000-plus-pound crazy things. We just don't need it. We don't need that. We're looking in the wrong direction. We're not paying attention. So anyway, that's my rant. My rant is on the state of Oregon that decided to come up with this tax, taxing bicycles. What a dumb idea. I'm going to call you out on it. If you want to talk to me about it, please talk to me about it. I want to hear the other side of the story. I would love to have someone on the air with me if they would like to have this conversation, because to me, it just you're going in the wrong direction. You're not taxing the problem. You're taxing an avenue of transportation, which is so much more sensible than driving a vehicle that is a consumer of fossil fuels, which, let's face it, fossils go back to ancient times. They go back to prehistoric. We're in the dark ages here. We need to address this and start looking forward and looking in a positive way and stop polluting our planet and start getting ourselves more fit and start changing things in a very, very positive direction. Millennials, are you out there? Are you listening? God, I love you guys. I really do. You ride bikes. You get it. You're starting to make changes in our cities. I love you guys. I really do. Talk to me about this. I want to hear more. So anyway, there are a ton of facts out there that you can look up. The Oregon Driver and Motor Vehicle Services has driver related facts and vehicle related facts. And each year here, it says they register about 1.8 million vehicles a year. And they issue 850,000 titles. They issue 400,000 plates for vehicles. There's a whole bunch of ways they could tag on a little extra. I'm not talking like a lot here. 1.8 million, add $2 onto the registration of $1.8 million. You generate a whole bunch of money and you can divide it up into infrastructure. And it's not going to hurt you to have to pay $2 extra for a motor vehicle registration. That's just not going to be difficult at all. If you can afford to drive a car, if you can afford to drive a truck, if you can afford to put the gasoline in it to maintain it, to go through the approximate $8,000 a year that it costs to drive a motorized vehicle in the United States, you can afford $2. So, you know, and if you can't, maybe you should reconsider. Maybe you should join the revolution here. Come ride a bicycle with us. Come experience what it's like to get out of the big metal box and to actually hear the things around you and smell the things around you and see the sights that are around you and just open your eyes to what else there is and the alternative and live better. It's kind of a nice thing. Really, really does work. So anyway, there's just a ton of articles out there. The supposed levy on auto sales would raise funds for infrastructure products. So there's a lot of things that they're doing to raise money in Oregon, as many states are. We're all looking for ways. I know here in Connecticut, we're having an awful lot of discussion about putting the tolls back on the major highways. I know that there are people out there that are going to scream when I say it, but Connecticut's one of the few states in New England and really in the Northeast that does not have tolls. Do it. Just do it. You know what? You want to cross through my state? Pay for it. I have no problem with it. And why do I have no problem with it? Because I ride a bike. But that's not true. I also cross over my state. I cross over state lines a lot. And I would pay to do that. I have no problem with that if I'm using a motorized vehicle. So, you know, these are things that we all have to look at. We've got a lot of government funding, which is cutting back on state funding. The states are all in a bit of a crisis. Everybody's working real hard to keep their budgets together. I get it. I understand all of this. But not bicycles. Really? Bicycles? Do we really want to take bicycles off the road? Do we really want to make it more expensive to own a bicycle than it is to own it's never going to be more expensive than it is to own a motorized vehicle. But do we really want to go that direction? We have to think about this because the aspects of riding a bicycle versus using a confined vehicle of which you are not moving in other than the fact that the vehicle is moving forward, it's so simple. To me, it seems like common sense. But then again, who am I to say? Well, I'm Peddlin' Ron. That's who I am to say. So anyway, that was my rant. I had to get it out. You're probably going to hear a lot more about it because the state of Oregon doing this sets the stage for other states to do the same thing. Boy, if I start seeing this become a problem, if I see California go this way, which they're looking at it, if I see Colorado going that this way, because they're looking at it, if I see Arizona looking this way, because they're looking at it, this is a huge problem. Those are states that a lot of people ride bikes in. And so they're gonna hit up them because they think that they can make some money off of this, and they think that they're going to be able to build their infrastructure over it. This is not the right way to go. It's just really not the right way to go. So I will rant, and I will rant, and I will rant about this, but I am not happy about it at all. By the way, the tax applies to the sale of new bikes with 26-inch or larger wheels at a retail price of $200 or more, and it's expected to raise about $1.2 million in its first year. So they have no regular sales tax, so many bike retailers are unaccustomed to collecting one. So that's another thing they have to look into. How much does it cost to collect the tax, the $15 tax, and how much of that is going to be used by the raising of the $1.2 million? Are you really going to get $1.2 million, or are you going to create another bureaucratic nightmare that's going to consume a bunch of that money? There's just so many wrongs in this idea. So anyway, another note here. On a positive side, let's go to the positive side because we really, really need to go there. And if you want to discuss anything, please consider going to the Facebook page, the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, and we can talk about it more there. I'd be very happy to do that. A lot of people do that. I've been getting a lot more comments there. It opens up just a bit of a blog post so people can have some conversations with one another. It's kind of fun. It's kind of a neat thing. And I will take any opinion you have. I'm not restrictive to that whatsoever. On a positive side, the indoor cycling season has begun. Why? Because, well, let me see. We got up last week and it was 10 degrees below zero. Right. My friend Warren, who I spent the night going to a women's basketball game with last night. Hi, Warren, if you're listening. He said that he got a weather station for the holidays. He got a really nice weather station.
That's exciting.
And so he set up a weather station, and he is a point with the Weather Underground, I think he's hooked in with. And so, Chaplin, if you look at Chaplin Center on Weather Underground, it's Warren.
Oh.
And Warren said he got a recorded cold that morning of 15 below. So what's it like to be in 15 and 16 below degree weather and 10 degree below zero weather? Well, I've had this conversation before. Anyone who has dealt with me, because I am in the bicycle industry, and I will get calls this time of year from impatient companies that are wondering why I'm not selling anything that is bicycle related. And I have a very, very quick explanation, very simple explanation for them. And this is what I tell them to do. Now pay attention here, because this is really important. I know I have California listeners. I know you guys. I get my comments from you. I thank you very much for listening. But you got to hear this, okay? When you go home tonight, this is what you're going to do. You're going to empty the freezer. You know that place where you put all your frozen food, your ice cream, you know, the cold stuff. You're going to empty the freezer, put it all out on the counter, okay? And then I want you to crawl inside of the freezer. By the way, do this with some assistance just so you don't get trapped in there, okay? But crawl inside there, close the door, and it is now warmer in there than it was here. So if you can understand that, you kind of understand how cold it is and why people do not tend to like to ride their bicycles quite as much when it's negative 10 out. So anyway, indoor cycling season, though, is on the positive side, and it has begun. And how do I know this? Because I work at my local community center, and I teach a bazillion indoor cycling classes. I am totaled up to, I think, 9 a week right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm a busy guy. And you know,
really are ultimate, Ron.
I actually have a spin class on Sunday, which is an hour and a half long, which is known as extreme spin. But my good friend Maggie calls it ultimate, Ron. So shout out to Maggie. Thank you very much for that comment. I always like that one. This is a great time to discover your local gym. It's a great time to discover other things like Zwift. That's kind of a neat thing. There's a nifty little thing you can do. You can sign up for it online, and you can actually ride with your friend from, I don't know, well, I'm not going to say California. We'll say Northern California, because it does get cold there. And you can ride with them. You can hop in on a ride that they're doing virtually online. Very cool stuff. It's a really neat idea. It keeps you motivated. It gets you out there. And it allows you to use your bicycle trainer, and you tie it into your computer. If you have to have all these devices, that is the thing. There is a commitment to this, a financial commitment to this, and so you have to decide whether or not you want to go in that direction or not. Or if you're incredibly, incredibly self-motivated, very rare, by the way, you can just set up your trainer in your house and do it yourself, and you can put a bicycle trainer in there, and you can, you know, hop on that and use that as your form of fitness for the day. Because, you know, riding your bike outside, I don't care if you have a fat bike, I don't care if you have studded tires, I don't care. It's cold at negative 10. It's just not right. And so it makes it very, very hard. If you're one of those that can do that, a very big tip of the winter cycling cap to you, because that's good for you. Very, very good. So indoor cycling season has begun. I'm a big lover of exercise classes, people that, like myself, that teach them, whether it be a spinning class, which is a set type of indoor cycling class, which has a program which follows it. And then there are other classes. I think there's a few different programs out there that are actually going to be very consistent from one gym to another gym to another gym. Or if you happen to get a hold of an old curmudgeon like me who just doesn't like to follow those standards quite the same way, but I love to coach people and I love to get people on their bikes and teach them about cycling. And I like to put it this way: I'm bringing outdoor cycling indoors. So I teach a cycling class, and my cycling classes are, they're popular, which is nice, and I thank everyone who comes to them. I really do appreciate your attendance there. A lot of the people, they get hooked into my method. They like it. They like the structure of it, and that works out well for them. And, you know, I try to keep it as interesting as possible because, let's face it, you're sitting on a bicycle that's going nowhere. That cannot be too interesting. But I do make it interesting. We play little games on the bikes. We do different things. We divide the room up. We have some fun with it. We have different drills that we play around with, and I try to keep it interesting. So my question is, what do you use on the positive side? What do you use to keep yourself in shape in the wintertime and, you know, keep yourself fit and hopefully make it so that when you sit on that saddle, when the nice weather comes along and you got the rubber on the ground or off the road, depending on what kind of bike you're riding, you know, you're fairly comfortable with it because at least you have some sort of a level of fitness that goes along with it. Or do you even ride a bike at all? What do you do? How do you do it? You can answer that one on my Facebook page if you'd like. I'd love to hear what it is that you use to keep yourself fit over the wintertime and motivated. I know there's people that cross-country ski and snowshoe, and if you're in areas that have the consistency of that, more power to you. I think that cross-country skiing is possibly one of the very best things I have ever done, if I can do it consistently, to get me ready for my bike in the spring. So, moving from that point and staying kind of on the same subject, because I do want to stay familiar with this idea, and that is we're going to the maintenance minute. The maintenance minute is preparing your bike for the trainer, or picking out a nice trainer, or whatever it is, so that you can do this exercise indoors, should you find the need to do so. So preparing your bike for indoor, there's a website, triathlete.com, and they have the beginner's guide to incorporating a bicycle trainer into cycling workouts. So their idea is very similar to mine. They tend to be more oriented towards workouts and towards structure as far as that goes, to keep your fitness. And if you do that and you stay with it, you can make it a lot more interesting, first of all, than just hopping on and throwing in a movie or throwing on a TV show and you know, watching that and, you know, doing it for a half an hour, 45 minutes. Oh, help you, please, if you do it for 2 hours. But, you know, some people do. So, you know, you're really looking for the time in the saddle, and that's really what it is. And that's another thing, too. Don't discount time in the saddle. Time in the saddle is good. So what do you do to get your bike ready for this? Well, first of all, if you can pick a bike that you don't care as much about, maybe it's your beater bike. Maybe it's that bike that you use to, in the good season, you use it to run down to the store and back, and maybe you use it to commute back and forth to work on. It's the bike that, you know, it's not your extra special, you know, pretty bicycle that you want to keep nice and you want to keep it clean all the time. And, you know, it's not that bike. Try to find another bike. If you can't, we can work on that too. I'll talk about that in a minute. But to prepare your bike for it, try to find the beater bike. The beater bike is the one you're not afraid to sweat on. Why are we worried about the sweat? Because sweat is terrible for your bike. Oh, it's awful. It just eats everything. It's destructive. It's a problem. And you know, if you put a bike on a trainer, you're going to sweat on it. You're definitely going to, because you're not going anywhere. Even if you have a fan on you and you've got a nice area that you can keep yourself from sweating too hard or too badly, and maybe you do it in a cool room, maybe you do it, I have a friend who does this out on their, they have a screened-in porch outside, and that's where they ride their trainer in the winter, and it's like, are you kidding me? And he said, you know, once you get going, you're pretty warm because you're not going anywhere, and it's not so bad. Not really sure about that at negative 10, but anyway. So you want to choose the right trainer. And bike trainers are all different, and they come in all different price categories. You can get very inexpensive ones, and you can get really sophisticated ones that have lots of information, and they'll talk to your computer, and they'll talk to your your information screen that you might have up in front of you. There's all sorts of things. They'll even talk to a bunch of other computers that are out there online that are riding with you when you go in the direction of like a Zwift system or something like that. So anyway, there are a number of different ones out there. You don't have to get real fancy with it if you don't want to. But I will say that the more sophisticated you get with your trainer, the more information you can get out of it, the more ability that you have to hook it up to a computer and ride online, quote unquote, virtually, the more interesting it is. And so it at least keeps your interest to a certain degree. So there's wind trainers, there's mag trainers, there's fluid trainers. Wind trainers are pretty much, they're less popular than they have ever been today. And really, it says here, less popular today, and thank goodness, as the resistance generated from the small fan isn't as loud as a 747 at takeoff, but it's far from silent. So the wind trainers are loud. They do make a lot of noise. We had one in an apartment many, many years ago, and I was on the second floor, and the people downstairs came up to me and said, "So are you guys neatniks? Are you like really like into keeping things clean?" And I laughed and I said, "Are you kidding? I mean, I'm a cyclist. We are far from neat, or I am far from neat. I know that we would rather be out riding our bikes than cleaning our houses." So therefore, I found it to be a humorous question. And I said, "Absolutely not." I said, "Why are you asking?" They said, "We noticed that you're vacuuming a lot." And I said, "We're not vacuuming a lot." And they said, "Well, especially it seems like that front room, we hear you cleaning that room all the time. We were just really curious as to what you guys were doing in there." And I went, "Oh," and I brought him upstairs and I walked him into the room that we had closed off, which we kept closed off so that it would be cooler in there. And I showed him the bike on the wind trainer, and they laughed and went, "Oh my God, that's what it is." I said, "Yeah, that's what it is." I said, "You know, we ride bikes. It's too cold to ride outside. We have a special room set up, and that's what it is." So bear in mind, if you are in an apartment, think about who's below you, because you will interrupt their privacy a little bit by making noises. And it really doesn't matter whether you're on a wind trainer or on a mag trainer or fluid trainer, but it is better if you're on a mag trainer or fluid trainer, which are the two more popular ones. And the mag trainer is a little bit more expensive than a wind trainer, but it certainly is quieter, and it reads off of magnetic resistance. Okay, so you've got, again, you've got a resistance, but it works on magnets. It's not on wind and doesn't make the noise. And then there's the fluid trainer. And the fluid trainer is, again, it works against a fluid chamber in the inside of the trainer itself. And there's pressure that is generated as the fluid changes. And so, again, it's more expensive and it's even quieter than the mag trainer is. So there are three different types of trainers that you can get, and they're all very durable. It's a great investment. I would definitely find one that is really stable. Most of them now today are really wide in the back, so they have a lot of stability on them. You're going to have a hard time tipping over on them. I just set a friend of ours up on a trainer last week when we were down in Florida. So that was kind of a neat thing. But real stable, so that's a good thing. There are blocks you can put underneath the trainer front wheel or underneath the bicycle front wheel, because you do take the rear wheel off sometimes, or you have the rear wheel rolling on a roller in the back. And it levels it out so you don't feel like you're falling off the front of the seat all the time. You can also use a, that's funny, they refer to something like a phone book. What's a phone book? That's funny. Yeah. Isn't that funny? Like Yellow Pages, phone books, big, thick, something or other.
I think you can still get those.
I think so.
I think they're not completely gone.
I think they are not as popular as they used to be.
Well, no.
Nor are they as thick as they used to be.
No.
Right. So anyway.
No. I still pay to be in the Yellow Pages.
Yeah. It's a funny reference. We need to talk about that.
Yeah.
Anyway. So anyway, you can level the bike out in some way to make it a little bit more comfortable to be sitting on, because you are sitting on your bicycle and you are going nowhere and you don't really get a lot of relief from the saddle on that. So anyway, Setting your bike up on the trainer, setting yourself up on a trainer, that's what you want to do. There are some interesting devices that are made that will keep your bike from getting sweat on profusely. They make special cut towel and bungee cord situations so you can drip down on it and you don't get it all over the top tube of your bike. Or you could just use a towel. Just use an old towel and drape it across the top tube of the bike. You're going to have to drape it across the handlebars because you're going to be sweating like a, you're going to be dripping like a faucet when you get on this thing.
And you also have to put towels on the floor.
And you got to put towels on the floor. I like to put down like a yoga mat or something like that. And you can put a towel on top of that,
right.
And that will help absorb a lot of the sweat. And then you can wash them so your room doesn't smell like a gym,
right?
Which is sort of important, especially if you're doing it in, you know, an apartment or a small house where, you know, you're using a room that's being used by other things. So you definitely want to do that. And then I like to set up some sort of an entertainment system that goes along with it, be it music or be it video entertainment, whatever, so that I have something to keep my interest. One of my favorite things to do years ago was when I would set it up.
Don't watch Downton Abbey.
I would set it up in front of a TV show. I preferred sitcoms over anything else because they were half-hour shows, and I would do intervals during the commercials.
So sitcoms are good, but I think action shows are probably the best.
Action shows will generate a little bit more adrenaline and get you a little more excited. So you could do that too. But the key is that whenever a commercial comes on, that's it. That's like, you know, the gun goes off. Now you got to go. Now you got to go hard. And you're going to find that you're going to hate your television because you're going to realize that, boy, do they send a lot of marketing at you when you're watching one of those shows.
They do.
And you don't realize it until you're doing intervals during the commercials.
The place that I noticed it was when I go to Cardio Express and I go on the trainer there. They have TV set up for you right in front of you.
Right.
And you realize it. Sometimes you become very aware of just how many. I don't know why you don't notice it at home when you're watching TV, but when you're sitting on the bicycle, you notice it's a lot of commercials.
Yeah, it is. So you use those commercials as a tool. And so, anyway, I think it's kind of a clever thing to do. It works pretty good. And unless you have a structured workout that you're going to do and you have it laid out in front of you. And I strongly recommend doing that because it does keep your interest. So preparing your bike for the trainer, that is our maintenance minute, which is far more than a minute, but that's okay. We went there and we talked about it. I've got a number of things on my list here today. Oh, gosh. There's been an awful lot of talk about Chris Froome. I'm going to zip down to the bottom of my page here. We're going to start with that. Chris Froome, who is an incredible cyclist. He's from Great Britain. Actually, he was from South Africa originally, I think, is where he started out. But he is well known for winning, what is it now, 4 Tour de France titles, I think is what he's up to. He's really like possibly, and sorry, Chris, if you're listening to this, because you never know who's listening, probably the most awkward-looking person on a bicycle I've ever seen. But boy, can he make it go fast. So he just negates anything that he, as far as style points go. You know what? A tip of the cycling cap to you. Boy, can you ride a bike. I'm impressed, but I just don't know how you do it that way because he just doesn't look comfortable on the bike. He doesn't look as fluid as others do. You know, you take somebody like Cancellara and you put him on the bike and he's just like, looks like he's part of the bike. You take Quintana and you put him on the bike and he's just pretty on his bike. And, you know, but Chris Froome doesn't necessarily look that way. But you know what? It doesn't seem to affect him because he's really, really fast. Well, Chris, apparently it has come out in the last few years or so that he has a little problem with exercise-induced asthma. Supposedly has had this problem since he was a child. But all of a sudden it's coming out because there is a limit as to how much of the, what's the drug you use there, Fran? The drug for asthma is?
Well, usually it's albuterol, but they have different versions of it.
Right.
There was clenbuterol, and there's another number of them.
No, he's using albuterol.
Okay.
And there is the UCI, the governing body of cycling, has a limit as to how much albuterol you can use because it's a stimulant, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it's a stimulant, but so is coffee.
Yes.
So there's other stimulants that are out there.
But isn't there a limit to caffeine as well?
They're talking about even more of a limit here soon,
right,
which is concerning to me. But
right.
Yeah, there is. It's very, yeah.
Why is it concerning
well,
to you?
Well, it doesn't matter to me. I'm not out winning any world championships
I was gonna say,
or competing
you're gonna start
in
your
any
racing
races.
Career again?
So, no, I'm not going to start my racing career again.
Okay.
Much to the chagrin of those who would like me to come back out and play, I don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon. I'm going to wait until I'm like 80.
Okay.
Then my field will be smaller.
Oh, right.
By either one way or another. But it's probably not true, by the way. It's everybody I know who is as fit as they are to race bicycles right now, they're going to be real fit when they're 80 also.
I know.
I don't see anything happening there. You think that Joe Sales is going to be any less fit when he's 80? Sailing is going to be any fit when he's less fit when he's 80?
I doubt
it very much.
Yeah.
He still wears a national championship jersey.
Oh, goodness.
So anyway, all this talk about Chris Froome, he had double the amount of albuterol in his body as he was supposed to have when he was tested at the end of the Vuelta a España. So there has been some discussion about a few things. First thing that the discussion was about was that it just didn't really come out for a long time. It was kind of hidden. No one really talked about it. And then in the last couple of months, all of a sudden, there's an awful lot of discussion going out. What's going on here? Why was this information withheld? There's a question as to whether the UCI withheld it. There's a question as to whether the Vuelta people withheld it. There's a question as to whether Team Sky withheld it. Team Sky, who is, by the way, one of the, we are the cleanest bicycle riding team on the earth, that we do not do drugs. They're very, very against any kind of doping.
And who?
Team Sky. Oh. They've been very outspoken about it. And
yeah.
Now their star, their rock star, has been found with excessive amounts of albuterol in his body.
Albuterol. So, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a lot of things written about it. If you go to either the Guardian or the Independent, which are based, I think they're both based out of England, you'll read a tremendous amount about it, but there's a lot of discussion. But what popped up and came across my screen was that our good friend Bob Key, as we like to call him, Bob Roll, who is the color commentator for the Tour de France and cycling, and he is a colorful character himself and just a tremendous amount of fun to listen to. He goes by the nickname of Bob Key. He raced in the Tour de France as a domestique for a few years in the original 7-Eleven team. Interesting guy. I can't wait to figure out a way to pin him down and get him on the show. I'd love to talk to Bob Key. Anybody know Bob Key? Anybody have a connection? Please line me up with him. I would love to get him on the show. He would be just a blast to talk to. But anyway, he has a, let's see, I think he has a YouTube channel. And I found this on his YouTube channel. And he called out Chris Froome on YouTube. Now, Chris Froome is a good friend of his. He or at least Bob Key, you know, Bob Roll tends to, you know, he identifies him as a very good friend and someone that he has been watching and someone that he has been just very excited to watch his career and to get to know him and on. But, you know, he's calling him out on the YouTube channel. So if you want a link to that, you can go over to my Facebook page and you can check that out. So go see Bicycle Talk on the Facebook page and listen to the video that Bob Key has put out about Chris Froome. He makes some points. There are some good questions in there. And I'm looking for a discussion on it. I would like to see if anybody out there is interested in talking about it a little bit more, because it's a thing. And where do we draw the line? This is the other thing. This person, according to his doctors, has an illness of sorts, that he has asthma.
Right.
And he needs to be treated for the asthma. And my God, if you're climbing the climbs that this guy's going up and the amount of effort he's putting out, it's all cardiovascular. There's just a tremendous amount of hard breathing going on.
And he's in thin air.
And it's in thin air. So there's a number of things that could trigger his asthma. And should he be told that he can't race a bicycle because he has asthma? I don't think that's right.
No.
Okay.
That's right.
So where do we draw the line here? I mean,
also the efforts. If you have, you can also have something called exercise-induced asthma, where you don't have asthma at normal conditions, but you have exercise-induced asthma.
I think that's what he has.
Yeah. And so that
is.
You, when you push yourself to those efforts, it triggers the asthma.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, do we keep him from being who he is because of this, or what? You know, there's another part of the discussion that can go out there. We need to talk about this. This is an interesting piece, because in the past we've worried about, you know, the whole the U.S. Postal thing and Lance Armstrong and the blood doping and, you know, all the different things they were doing, and you know, that's a different story. That's an entirely different story. I mean, we're talking about transfusions and injections and lots of things
that were specifically to help their performance.
Specifically to help their performance.
This is to treat an illness.
This is to treat an illness, but it does help the performance,
yes,
too.
It does.
So where do you draw the line?
Right.
Where is it? I mean, where do you go with this? I love bike racing. I'm going to continue to watch bike racing. I don't care what the naysayers say about, oh, those cyclists, they're all just a bunch of druggies and yada-da-da-da.
Do they say that about NFL players?
No.
Why?
Good question. Good question.
And baseball players?
And good question. Keep going. You know, we can go right down the list. We can go down the list. I think the only clean sport that's out there, and I had this discussion.
Go-kart racing?
No. Hockey players.
Really?
Do you ever hear of a hockey player doping?
You don't hear of it, but why wouldn't they?
Why would they?
Why wouldn't they? Because you could still use it for performance.
I suppose. But it's less
all
likely.
All it is that you. Why is it less likely? Maybe it's just that you haven't heard about it.
Maybe.
It's
anybody
still a
know
sport,
about this? Let us know.
It's still a sport where if you took a substance that could enhance your performance, it would help you. Basketball,
true.
Too.
I mean, it could make you stronger.
Of course.
So you could use it in that. I mean, professional bowlers have been known to take steroids.
What about
professional
basketball?
Golfers have been known to take steroids.
What about basketball?
Basketball? Oh, yeah. There's definitely abuse there.
Yeah.
Certainly abuse there. And then there's then you get into the whole, you know, question of, well, you know, we're using this drug on this person so they can continue to play and perform. And that now we're crossing over the football line here with the concussion medication.
Right.
You know, and it's like, you know, put me in, coach. You know, put me in, coach. I can still do it. I'm okay. Here, take this. And they shoot him up with a little something or other, and they get back into the game again. So, and then when they're 45 years old, they completely lose their minds because of the concussion damage. And just like, wow, scary stuff. So, but, you know, where do you draw the line? It'll be a forever discussion. As long as there are large amounts of money that are thrown at sport, and that is pretty much commanded by us, the people who watch sport, the people who enjoy it, the people who are willing to pay the ticket prices to go see it. Now, this is where cycling has a crossover here, because, you know, the beauty of bicycle racing is that you don't have to pay to be a spectator. You can just watch them go by. So unless you're going to Belgium to watch a cyclocross race, of which they close it off completely, and you do have to pay to go watch a cyclocross race in Belgium. But I would pay to go watch a cyclocross race in Belgium, because it's like that's the epicenter of the best cross in the world. So anyway, so what do we do with this? That's definitely an issue. It definitely is. So got a few more things here to talk about. I've got, oh, gosh. I have so many things that come across. I bumped into this one right here. It came off a bicycle retailer, and it was a, it's just, there was an article about building a safer bicycle. We're talking about building safer cars, right? And safer transportation. So we're talking about driverless cars and all these things. So there's a few things that I touched on here. And I found a couple of different pieces. But the this one kind of caught me and made me laugh because I making a safer bike. It's so much so that I actually posted this on also the Facebook page. So if you want to comment on this, please do. There's Velo Capital Partners, an investment group that has been studying the international bike market for several years, is launching a company called Veliso, offering several technologies that combined would produce what the company calls the world's safest bicycle. Okay, the technologies include electronic anti-lock braking. Oh, my God, please no. A 360-degree warning system, automatic emergency braking, and automatic electronic tire pressure management. The company wants to bring the technologies to the OE market, and it's initially launching an Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign that would give consumers an opportunity to obtain the technology directly. Ah, making bikes safer. Very, very interesting. So I did post this online so you can take a look at it and see, because there's a connection with this too, which is really interesting. And the connection is that, let's see here, I have it hiding in here somewhere. It's Trek Bicycles and Ford Motor Company and a company called Tome, T-O-M-E, they're now showing, and they showed this at a latest show, and it was a bicycle-to-vehicle communication system. Now, this could be a good thing. This could be a bad thing. But why can't we just go out and ride our bikes? So they're offering and launching, Ford is launching a cellular vehicle-to-everything program that includes bicycles. So how does this work? Does it mean that you have to have a smartphone on your bicycle or some sort of a GPS unit on your bicycle so the car can understand that you're there and they can stay away from you? I don't get it. I again, would love to know more about this, but it was at the Consumer Electronics Show, so the latest CES show that was this week, and they offered this artificial intelligence driven bicycle to vehicle communication system. I'm becoming overwhelmed. I'm starting to wonder whether the Terminator is riding my bicycle or it's me. I just can't believe they would do this. So Ford announced a system that uses cellular communications to allow vehicles to communicate with other vehicles, pedestrian devices, bikes, roadside infrastructure, including traffic signs and construction zones. Ford is working on it with Qualcomm, which is a leading cell phone system, and they are calling it the C-V2X, and it also provides opportunities for direct bicycle electronic integration as well as mobile phone app hookup integration for cyclists. I'm just uncomfortable with this. What happened to the days that you just put your, you know, you just got out and rode your bike? And, you know, there were no electronic things. You didn't have a little device sitting on your handlebars that told you how fast you went or how far you went. You didn't have another device that told you what your heart rate was. You didn't have another device that held your, or a holder that held your cell phone so you could record all this. What happened to the days when we just went out and rode our bikes? So I'm going to throw this out there, too, for anybody who's listening. If you want to become part of this, I would like to start a little revolution of promoting a ride. Maybe we should have a day out of the year, since we've become so technologically married to our bicycles. There should be one day dedicated, a national day. Maybe I'll start this, the Bicycle Talk Day. A national day where we all go out and ride without any devices whatsoever. We just go ride our bikes. What do you think, friend? Could you do it?
Do you want me to ride my bike without my cell phone? I mean, I don't have to be looking at it, but
no cell phone,
not in
no
my pocket
computer,
even?
no cell phone, no computer, no device, no heart rate monitor, no device whatsoever, not even a watch. Nothing.
So,
no electronic devices whatsoever.
So the watch and the heart rate monitor and the and putting tape over my cycle computer, those are all fine and good. But not having a cell phone, so now that we have this thing that's a safety device, I should just not use it?
I don't know. We'd have to talk about this.
Well, why don't you just take the cell phone and it goes in the back pocket and you can't look at it?
And you turn it off.
Yeah.
And then if you need it, you can turn it on.
All right.
How's that?
Yeah, that depends on,
well, we're going to have to put some parameters to this.
I'm a physician.
I know you are.
Yeah, I'm on call.
I understand that.
So if I could,
I guess you wouldn't be able to ride on the ride.
If that's where you would like to go with that, that's
no,
fine.
No, I do not want to go that way.
I think the other thing is, what I'm saying is you might want to put dispensation for have a cell phone, but you can't look at it. It has to go in your pocket, and you can't run any apps.
Right.
You just have it there for emergencies, you know,
right.
or if you're
right.
running a business and part of your business is you have to be available for cell phone calls, then you have the phone with you.
Right. Right. I mean, we could have some limitations, but I don't want to see anything on anybody's
handlebars. The larger reason is the safety issue. We have this incredible safety device that we didn't used to have. If you're stuck somewhere and something happens to you, you can call 911 and you don't have to go looking for a phone. If you're down and you can't move, but you can talk and you can use your phone, you can call 911 and get help. That's my only contention. That I think you should be able to, let's do that, but let's bring the phone and let's put it in our back pocket and not run any apps.
Or in our bag or wherever.
Yeah.
Somewhere where we can't have immediate access to it.
Right.
Unless you need to.
Yeah. It's just
okay.
For, as a safety feature.
So a turn it off. So we need a national turn it off day.
Yeah.
And it needs to go along with bicycle rides. You know what I'm going to talk to this about? I'm going to talk to Tony in Hartford about this.
Okay.
Because he'll like this because he's kind of a, he's more of a minimalist kind of guy and transportation oriented guy. Yeah, I'm going to talk with him about it. We're going to cook this idea up, see if we can bring it into a national campaign. I like the idea because we're just so married to all this stuff. And then what do? You go home, you get done with your ride, you finish your ride. Your ride then communicates over to the computer, and then the computer communicates to that thing that I hate, which is the
social media?
No, the one where everybody shares their information and brags at one another.
Strava?
Strava. Yes, let it be known. Pedal and Ron does not like Strava. I will be very open about it. I don't like it. And it creates an atmosphere that I'm not comfortable with. And I know there's lots of people out there that love it. And a lot of my friends have it. And here comes the phone. So we might hear something here. But I think it creates an environment which is too competitive for most of us out there. If you want to be that person, you can be that person. I have no problem with that. But, Strava is an interesting issue because – so I guess we have a caller here, and I think someone's probably going to call me out on the Strava comment right now. Fran, what do we have going on over here? We have someone on the phone?
We've got Mike from Eastford.
Mike from Eastford. Oh, yes, Mike. Are you there?
I am here.
Oh, what nerve did I touch?
Actually, not so much a nerve, but just wanted to talk about a realization of our time.
Okay.
Two things. One about, I agree with shutting things off, the whole shut-off ride thing.
Yay, you can come on my ride.
But it's so hard these days to find a phone booth if you have an emergency.
You're right.
People are not going to open their doors if you're hurt.
All right, a point for Fran.
That's what I said.
You can't put your thumb out if you're bleeding profusely.
What I said.
Because nobody will pick you up.
Thank you.
So I keep a flip phone on my bike just for emergencies.
Okay.
But the rest of it, a day off would be nice.
Yeah. I'm just thinking that, why not just shut it off for a while? Let's go out and just ride our bikes. I remember doing that. I remember doing that. And getting home safely and everything was fine.
Absolutely. But I'm sure you've had the time where you crashed somewhere. Or you did what I did one day. I'm in North Granby and I snap a crank off. I crash.
Ooh.
I'm bleeding all over my body.
Yeah, you need your body. You need your phone. Okay.
You need your phone. But somebody picked me up, amazingly enough, in an MG convertible.
Oh, nice.
It wrote on the tonneau cover.
Nice.
Holding my bicycle. and the guy was complaining, said, "Don't bleed on my leather."
Oh.
Bring you home. But I think those days are over.
I think they are, too. I really do. You know, and, you know, the last crash I had, and it was a pretty big one a few years back, and a really nice woman and her daughter pulled over, and they had one of my favorite vehicles. They had a truck-like vehicle, and they packed.
They were really nice.
Were super nice, and they packed me in the back. They actually drove me home, which was very. And they took Fran, too, because Fran was hysterical because she was not happy with the fact that I was hurt because she actually likes me. So
that happened to my wife. She got picked up by one of those truck-like vehicles. We were on an early ride in the spring. She hit some sand, went down, broke her wrist.
Oh, not good.
Somebody trucked her back to the house. I drove her to the hospital. So
yeah,
it was handy that time.
Yeah.
I'd like to comment on the other comment I would like to make is on the communication thing.
Okay.
Communication device. It was about a year ago, well, over a year ago, because it wasn't 15 below, but I was riding my bicycle in a place you guys know well, coming up Route 89 going north.
Yep.
And crossing at the intersection where Mount Hope Crossing is, where the bridge is.
Know it well, the hump.
Okay.
Yes.
So you
yes.
kind of go up the little thing around the corner, mm-hmm. and so I'm going through, it's green light, and I'm going up. Just about to crest the little hill there, when behind me comes an RV with somebody on their telephone.
Oh.
And I came within the closest I've ever come to death. I just slammed on the brakes.
Wow.
If I had not slammed on the brakes, that RV would have crushed me into the guardrail.
Right.
Now, the reason I bring that up is because immediately I thought to myself, well, I have my blinky on, but he's not paying attention. He's watching his telephone.
Well,
I thought to myself, and I have a friend who's a kind of a science guy, to say the least, and I said, you know what? If you could devise some sort of communication device that would notify every car that there's a bicycle in front of them,
mm-hmm.
whether it become a head-up display or an alarm goes off or
right.
something,
right.
I think a lot of tragedies could probably be avoided.
I'm with you on that. Yeah, I agree.
That's very interesting.
I agree, and it is interesting. I don't know how it would be done, how we could design that within the bikes, because unless you have the ability to be able to afford a cellular phone, you know, I don't know how we make this happen.
Well, there's so much connectivity in vehicles these days. I drive BMWs, and they're just like so advanced in terms of connectivity and talking
right.
to each other. I mean, if it's raining 10 miles away, another car is going to tell my car that it's raining.
Wow.
Yeah.
Enough.
That's
you know,
incredible.
So there's that level of connectivity these
yeah.
days. And I don't think it would be too hard to build some sort of common transmitter into the blinky, for example.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think
right.
you're right. I think
you're
that's
right.
coming.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a blinky. And
it's probably
somehow
coming.
Somehow communicated with whatever universal packages in cars these days.
Right.
I think if the car companies really wanted to, and if somebody designed a simple and affordable product that it
right.
would sell.
And you know, the blinky, you can see them for a quarter mile away. So if the car could see it from a quarter mile away, it would be able to then warn the driver of the car.
Absolutely.
So, hey, Mike, I got to cut you off because we're running out of time.
No
here.
Problem. I just wanted to make a couple of quick comments.
Thank you so
Glad
much.
You got you back.
Thank you for
Happy
contacting
Happy New Year,
us.
Mike.
Happy
it's
New
great
year.
To talk to you again.
Happy New Year.
Okay, so you know we've run out of time, and or as the Car Talk guys used to say, you've wasted a completely good hour with us. So so anyway, I just want to bring a couple of things. I'm going to run through this very quickly. We are now right now in the middle of or what has just started. The Cross Nationals are in Reno, Nevada, right now. Yesterday was the 23 plus non-comp championship race, like the one we had in Hartford with the big mudslide last year. Wednesday, today, we have collegiate, and we also have men's masters 60 plus. Tomorrow will be men's masters 30 through 59 and the U23 non-championship race. Friday will be the women's masters races. Saturday, industry race, juniors race, and single speed race, and Sunday will be the elite races. So please check it out. You can go on to cyclocrossmagazine.com, and they are running coverage every single day. This is exciting. It's really cool. It's stupid warm in Reno. They don't have any water. It's just dry and warm, and it's like, Who did this? We need Hartford back. Anybody who wants to comment that can. Actually, I know my friend Justin already has commented about it because we were exclaiming, well, you know, where's the snow? Where's the ice? Where's the winter? Where's the cross conditions? Anyway, moving on from that, one other thing that's coming up very, very soon, Friday, February 16th, 2018, we will have the North American Handmade Bicycle Show right here in Hartford, Connecticut at the Connecticut Convention Center. First day starts, February 16th, and it's exhibitor and media. Let's see, we have the show hours are 10 to 6 a.m., 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Sunday, 10 to 5 p.m. Looking forward to it. We'll have more discussion about this. And I am now going to tell you that my name is Peddlin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. And you can always send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you want to listen to past episodes, contact us on whus.org or on iTunes. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep your rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.